Well, good morning. We resume our study of Proverbs, and there's nothing I like talking more about problems of speech. I mean, it's just a trap you step yourself into. And what should come to mind is that just a few weeks ago when we were studying James, we kept making the comment that there are a lot of connections between James and Proverbs, and you'll see that today. But this is something certainly that we all need and can be helped by this lesson. So let's start with a prayer. Earl, would you lead our thoughts, please?
Our Father and our God, we are grateful to you for many things. And at this point in time, in this moment in time, we're thankful to be able to have this place and this time set aside that we can come together for the purpose of studying from your word. We pray that you would be with Philip as he shares with us the things he prepared for the class. And we will be with all of us as we open our hearts and minds to be receptive to the truth that is within the pages of your word. Help us to apply these things to our lives in ways that would help us be better servants and in ways that would benefit us in our lives as we strive to serve you. In Jesus' name.
Amen. We're seeing in our study of Proverbs the different characteristics of wisdom that no matter what topic you're looking at, that you see these characteristics. And to the characteristics that is true throughout these Proverbs is the idea that wisdom is related to seeing consequences and controlling self. That it's very much like a car analogy in that you see the way you want to go, and so you control the vehicle, whether the speed, acceleration, the braking, the steering, etc. And this is certainly so with the subject of speech. You got to think about what you're saying, the consequences of those things, and apply proper control. And we'll see those features over and over here in these statements about Proverbs. So let's jump in. There are a lot that we have to look at. We can't exhaust it there even more. And we'll hit some quicker than others. And I'm trying to spend a little bit more time on the ones that are fairly unique to the Proverbs. Though Proverbs say things about speech that other parts of the Bible say also. So let's start here, first of all, with some general aspects to it. Look with me in Proverbs 18, verse 4, as we look at the idea of the power of conversation. And I want to broaden it a little bit and just not just think about speech, but the idea of conversation. So Proverbs 18, verse 4. Tristan, can you read that, please? 18, verse 4.
The words of a man's mouth are deep waters. The wellspring of wisdom is a flowing brook.
I call your attention to the idea of deep waters. What's connected to deep waters in the first statement?
A man's mouth.
Okay. Now look at 25. Can you read that also for us, Tristan? 20 and verse 5.
Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out.
Okay, here again we have another reference to deep water. This is talking about either counsel or purpose of a person's heart is also deep water. So, recall the statements made in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 about no one really knows the spirit of a man except that man. And these Proverbs were making similar statements that there are depths to the human mind and heart and person. And the first statement says that words bring them out. So if you think about it, the only way to really know someone is to observe their deeds or listen to their words. If not for deeds and words, we would know nothing about one another. Not anything of substance. And, of course, words and deeds can be manipulated. People can act one way and really not be that way. They can say something and really not mean it. And we understand how that can be manipulated. But the principle here in Proverbs, and again, we got to learn to look at the guiding main principle and not just all the exceptions and things like that, is that when a person speaks and you hear them speak enough, then that person becomes known. Who they are is drawn out. It may be that a person is deep waters, but speech is the faucet. And that's why Jesus said things about, you know, judgment of our words, every idle word and things like that. And of course, we saw that in James, that general idea. If you want to know someone, listen to them. And the idea of drawing out deep waters, if you want to know someone, get them to talk. Ask them things. I mean, when I walk away from a conversation and no one really asks me anything, I conclude they don't really know. They don't want to know anything about me. And that's okay. Love you means pretty boring. But it's the idea that if you really want to get to know someone, then you're going to try to turn that faucet on. You're going to try to bring out from them what they think, what they've experienced, their perspective, and so forth. And so I want you to see from the onset here, the idea of the power of conversation, because that's what these two verses are talking about. It's not just what you say, it's one way. Because a lot of the things we see here in Proverbs is a one-way kind of thing. Watch what you say and so forth. And what you say can be of help. But it's the idea of bringing out the other person. And it's the power of conversation. And if we've had a very vivid demonstration of that recently in our studies the last several months, it's in that series on Jesus and the people he met. How great he was at that. And here's what's amazing is that Jesus didn't even have to do that, did he? He knew what was in a person before they ever spoke, but he still drew it out of them. And of course, the classic example is a woman at the well or someone like that. So, there are inappropriate things we can say, and there are positive and constructive things that we can say, but look at the power here of conversation. So let's talk about some aspects of the proverbial guidance here. Let's first start with restraint. Look at 10:19. And Elaine, will you read 10:19 and Zachary 11:12? And Gary, will you read chapter 17, both 27 and 28 here in just a second, please? All right, Elaine.
When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise.
Pretty strong statement. Okay, Zachary, 11:20.
Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent.
Okay, and then the last one, 17, 27, and 28.
Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a true spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool who keeps silence is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent.
Okay. What's the pattern here in these proverbs?
Keep your mouth shut a long time.
It's a good idea to keep your mouth shut. There's a paradox here. Because there are a lot of moments in biblical teaching where you are called upon to say something. And if you don't, you're wrong if you don't say something. But on the other hand, we see that there is wisdom in restraint of your speech, of your lips. What character qualities are necessary for this? What's necessary for this restraint?
Self-control.
Right? Self-control.
Meekness.
A meekness, okay, that I think this is a byproduct of democracy. This is a byproduct of the First Amendment. If everybody has the freedom to say what they want to say, then people can easily think that what I have to say is so important, I have to say it, and everybody should listen to me because that's my right. It really breeds the idea that whatever you have to say is important. And sometimes what I have to say is not important. And I have to say, it's one of my biggest challenges, because I'm up teaching all the time, that I think, okay, whatever I have to say is important. And it's not always. It's not. And, you got to realize that, well, maybe I don't have the right perspective here. Maybe I need to think about this before I say something about it, because I could be off on this. Yeah, Leslie.
I think that, whoever spreads slander is a fool. Relates to the idea that we're patient with people. We don't necessarily see or hear something bad about someone and then all of a sudden just start spreading that and gossiping that. We're patient with them, and maybe we have the opportunity to exercise some wisdom in their lives over time. But you don't just jump on people or pounce on them, you know, for something that they might have done or said.
Yeah, I think that's a good domain to think about, and certainly one of the references there. If we think about words like labels or even stickers, pill and stick, that what we say about someone is like pilling and putting a sticker on them. And we got to really watch that, because we may prematurely put a sticker on them. That's not always true of them. Or maybe it's true at a certain moment, but not later on. Or it may be that we put the wrong sticker on them. We got it wrong. And so here we've covered somebody up with stickers, and it's not really who they are. It distorts our view of them. It can distort somebody else's view of them. We saw this recently about friendships and what we say about people. And a lot of these proverbs, certainly, they overlap. But that's a great application of that idea. Yeah. Okay, let's look at another one. Boy, these are so rich, we can just stay all day on some of these sections. The opposite of restraint, okay? So, Ray Conies, can you read 15:2, and then I'm going to have you read 15:28, the same chapter. Ken, can you read 18:13? And Dave, can you read 29:20 for us here in just a moment? Okay, 15:2 and then 15:28, please.
The wise speak, presenting knowledge appropriately, but fools spout foolishness.
And 28.
The mind of the righteous thinks before speaking, but the wicked person spews out evil.
All right, 18:13.
If one gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame.
All right, and then 29:20, please.
You see a man who has hasty in his words, there is more hope for a fool than for him.
All right, thank you. Some translations talk about pouring out or gushing out, which conveys a complete lack of what?
Self-control.
Control or restraint or a valve of any sort, any kind of filter. We have an expression in our street language today, put a filter on that, you know, or earlier, put a muzzle on that kind of thing, which is different. Sometimes a muzzle, sometimes a filter is a better idea. But it's foolishness to gush out words and to pour out words. What causes us to do this?
Pride.
Okay, there's that thing we talked about a while ago, that you think that what you have to say, you're always right, and then what it is important, and everybody's got to hear it, and so you're going to say it. Yeah.
Sometimes you're just nervous.
Sometimes what?
You're just nervous.
Okay, that you're fearful of something or nervous about something, okay, yeah.
Just kind of babble.
Yeah, babbling, yes, that's a good expression.
Another common saying that kind of relates to these, I think I've got this right, is that be sure your brain is in drive before engaging your mouth.
Yeah.
I think is the way it goes, which is just very similar idea of all of these proverbs.
Right.
Think through what you're going to say before you just start gushing.
Right. Think before you speak. Exactly right. When you look at these, I mean, in a way, go back to that initial thing that I said about the characteristics of wisdom. And characteristics of wisdom often involve consequences and control. And when you look at those last two, the fool pours out and gushes, the wise person restrains. Well, the fool is not thinking about his gushing having an impact. What drives the fool is getting it out. Not what it does once it comes out, but just getting it out. That's the purpose. As long as I can get it off my chest. I think there is be careful here, because there's a value to some of this philosophy. A very popular, in popular psychology, a very popular notion is to express everything you're thinking and feeling, you know, get it off your chest, so to speak. I think that there is a healthy dimension to that communicating, expressing yourself at certain times to certain people is very important and needed, okay, and healthy psychologically. But an unfiltered gushing, the proverb says, whoa, 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 that's very foolish and it can do a lot of damage, okay? So it really does take this discretion about what are the consequences of this, Because oftentimes, it's because of consequences, we should say something. Because if we don't, the consequences are negative. And the consequences can be productive and good if we do say something. So thinking about consequences and applying the right control based upon those consequences. We'll look in, again, let's just come back to this general idea of the power of conversation with the idea of potential. Look in 15:1. 15:1, 18:21, and 25:15. So, Earl, would you read 15:1? And then Cindy, I want to have you read 18:21. And then Frank, I want to have you read 25:15, the last one there, 25:15. Okay, 15:1.
A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger.
Okay, 18:21.
Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit.
Okay, and then 25:15, Frank.
My own forbearance of a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone.
A lot of references, or at least several references to rulers or kings in the Proverbs. Of course, remember who's writing this. Most of the Proverbs, not all, but most of them were written by Solomon. But the king is represented as someone who has a lot of control, someone who has a lot of impact on other people. And here it says, what can affect the king?
A gentle tongue.
That's right. The right thing said to him. We understand all rulers are surrounded by counselors. And oftentimes the direction of a ruler is determined by the circle of counselors that are around him and what they're saying in his ear. So this is saying that even a king who has a lot of power can be affected by what somebody says to him. So all of these, he's saying that speech has all this potential. And so, you know, we're looking at particulars. I'm going to pull back and look at these big ideas here about the power of speech. And what we can conclude from this is don't underestimate your words, both for hurt and for help, for both. Don't think that, you know, when someone says, oh, it's just something I said, that's one of the last things we should ever say. It's just something I say, as if your words don't matter. I really think this way and I really feel this way, and then here are my words and they don't really matter. The Bible is shouting, words matter. They do. You know, the old thing, 60 stones, break my bones and names will never hurt me. Well, they do hurt. They do. Now, you can choose not to let them hurt you, but they do, by nature, impact other people, what you have to say. And so, I guess the first step the Bible is teaching us, and didn't James do that with his illustrations about the rudder and the bridle and the horse and the little fire that kindles, you know, the whole forest ablaze? It's teaching us the potential of the tongue. You know, the fire is used negatively there, but the rudder of the ship is used positively. You can guide that ship with the tongue. Now, if you can control your tongue, you can guide your whole life, your whole body. So there's that idea of potential again. Words have great potential, good or bad. And then there are these here. These are really good. And I think one of these will be familiar. There is one often quoted. 10:32. Elaine, would you read that? And then Les, would you read 15:23? And Zachary 25:11. All right, 10:32.
The lips of the righteous bring forth what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverted.
Okay, 15:23.
A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good is it?
Okay, good. Due season. And then the last one, 25:11.
A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver.
All right, let's get the picture. Apples of gold in a setting of silver. What's the image? I mean, if you like apples, that doesn't sound appealing. You don't want an apple of gold. Unless it's a gold delicious, it's perfectly right. But what is this image about, apples of gold in settings of silver?
Worth.
It's worth, yeah. It's gold and silver. But yet it's been crafted. It's not in its raw form. It's been crafted and made something ornamental that's attractive to look at. Hilton can help us with this, and Les can help us with this maybe, and y'all can enlighten me later on this. But I'm just amazed how many people paint fruit. What's up with that? But then I look at it and I'm like, it's pretty. Because fruit's made to be attractive. God made it attractive so we would eat it for our nourishment. And then by picking the fruit, you know, that's what the tree needs it to be picked, to be healthy. And then the seeds, you know, we spit the seeds out and the seeds go into the soil and it reproduces. And the whole thing is just the way it's intended to be. It's intended to look good. So this makes sense. It's apples of gold in a setting of silver. This is a very attractive thing of great value. So think about that. It's a wonderful combination. It has inherent value and it's attractive. There are some things that can be attractive but not have value, and some things can have value but not be all that attractive in a way. But this is both. And so words fitly spoken are like apples of silver, apples of gold instead of silver. And all of us have experienced that when someone said something that was fitting to us and how valuable it was to us, how pleasant it was to us. What does it take to do this? All of these are talking about fit or applicable or, you know, fitting words or apt words. What does it take to be able to do this? Yeah.
Well, I don't want to jump ahead of you if you're getting ready to go to James at some point. But
I'm not. Go ahead. Okay. Go for it.
But in James chapter 3, you know, he said, if anyone does not stumble what he says, he's a perfect man or a mature man. So it takes maturity to be able to craft and to do this with your words.
Mm. It's a great biblical answer to that, Les.
You know, we study all kinds of other things in life. When our jobs, you know, in school, we study the Bible, we read other books. But there are books on speaking that you can study as well. But the idea that I want to bring out is you have to be aware of it, and you actually have to think about it, and you have to study it. Like, study how to speak well, how to express yourself well. There's lots of books about it, you know, that are readily available. But of course, Earl is correct about that. The primary source of good speech and good language is the Bible. Because when we get the words of the Lord on our lips, the words of Jesus, and we put it in our hearts, then it's going to come out like a well, you know, like a spring.
Yeah, that's the right intake to get the right output, for sure. And if you think about what is appropriate in speech, it usually involves two situations, two aspects. What's the situation, and who are the people involved? You can say something that's totally fitting and appropriate and beneficial to a certain person in a certain situation, and it's not to another person in another situation. Even the idea of rebuke. A rebuke properly placed is very valuable. A rebuke that's misplaced is not. Wrong person, wrong time, wrong circumstances. It's not. Okay? So it requires a sensitivity. It requires being in tune with people and aware of situations. And it comes back to that thing at the very beginning about a human being has deep waters. Words are one way in which you understand a person. And so getting to know a person enables you to know what to say to them in a certain situation. If you don't know someone, it's like shooting at a target with a blindfold on. You're just taking random shots. And that's not good. Not good at all. So it's a really, really demanding thing in a way. But a wise person does this. Really good. Yeah, right.
I said it's the opposite of what we've been reading about. In other words, a lot of these guidelines don't fall into those same traps. In other words, it's thinking through it and thinking about the person, just like you just said. Yeah. Because everything we just read, we can be guilty of thinking that we're empathetic, or maybe not. In other words, I think preparation is a pretty big deal to be effective in your words, counsel, or else you're just like all the other proverbs that we just read about, basically. You could miss the mark with your words.
It is so beneficial to combine all these, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you think you've got to gush out and you've got the right to say something anytime, any place to anybody. I mean, think about that value system. I got the right to say anything I want to say to anybody, anywhere. Guess what? You're about to violate many of these proverbs. And get yourself in trouble. We're going to see that. That's where we're going next, Brother Frank. You're exactly right. Okay, so wise is the person who knows how to say the right thing at the right time to the right person.
And all of that is kind of scary, because when you think about somebody's situation they might be in, and you want to say something, but you're afraid to say something because it might be the wrong something. Yeah. And so, you know, it really kind of paralyzes you sometimes. But if you've walked in their shoes and you can be empathetic and not just sympathetic, you might have a better opportunity to really speak to their problem, because you've lost that baby too, and she has.
Right.
Lost that parent, or whatever it is, you know, you might carefully share your experience and help a little bit.
Yeah, two things on that. One is, sometimes it's inappropriate not to say something, okay? But what you refer to is backstory. And sometimes when you know the backstory, or you have a history with someone, you do know what's appropriate to say. And they can receive it from you better than if with someone they don't have a history with. And so that relationship is huge there. One more comment, we're going to go on, Zach.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Proverbs 25, verse 12, is the next verse there, gives a good example of what you were talking about, of understanding the situation and being wise in how you present it. Like, a gold ring or an ornament of gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear.
Right.
So he's wise in that he chose to reprove him when he's listening.
Yeah, they do go together really well. And the collector of the Proverbs wants us to see them together, because it uses the precious metal illustration in both, metaphor both, yeah. Okay, let's talk about foolish talk and words that hurt in particular here, all right? So I want to hit some of these really, really quickly. Frank was just talking about getting in trouble. Let's look here, 12:13. Dave, can you read that? Not that you've ever gotten in trouble with your dad, and I'm not saying that you have. It's been a while. The other one's not here, so you can get away with saying that. Okay, so, and then someone had you read from chapter 12, verse 18. Okay, 12:13.
Okay. The evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble.
All right, 18.
There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing.
Wow. Thrust of a sword or healing. Two completely different outcomes, right? All can be brought about by words. So this goes back to Frank's point a while ago. Few things can get us into trouble quicker than what we say. Very few things. We emphasize that when we study James. So let's look at some more here. Vincent, we'll use you again. 25:20. Flip over there. And then Ray Coney's, will you read 27:14?
Like one who takes off a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar on soda, is he who sings songs to a troubled heart.
Mm. Okay, 27:14.
Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing.
All right, these are very vivid, aren't they? It's a cold day, and all of a sudden, somebody jerks your coat off. Or you're just climbing out of the bed and trying to stir in your house, and your neighbor bursts in and yells, good morning, you know, and starts just blaring into your ear before you can even get your blood flowing. This is the opposite of what we saw a while ago about fit words. This is inappropriate communication. In both of these scenarios, why is this happening? Where's the person failing here? Where's this stemming from, that they're jerking the coat off on a cold day and bursting in and saying things early in the morning? Or speaking, joyful things to someone who's down and in trouble. Where's this stem from? Do what?
I said it's not the time for that.
Not realizing the time, the situation, the moment, reading the room, as we say these days. What else is it from which does it stem?
Well, selfishly, it's all about what you want to say,
consider. Right. There is a root of selfishness there to it. Yeah. So look at 25:14. Gary, can you read 25:14 and then Tristan 27:1-2 for us?
Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give.
Okay, 27:1-2.
Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Let another man praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips.
Okay, three kinds of boasting. One is you'll say you'll give something, but you don't. Which means either you never intended to, or maybe you intended to, but what?
You can carry through.
You couldn't carry through. Either you won't or you couldn't. Oh, I'll give you this. Then you go to get it to give to someone, and you don't have it after all. Okay? Or somebody comes and takes it from you. In other words, you're overstretching. You're writing a check you can't cash. Okay? And then that next statement about boasting about tomorrow, where did we see that?
James.
You can't make those plans. It's the Lord's will. And so another kind of boasting is that you're going to establish these plans. You're going to accomplish this. You're going to do that. But the future is not under your control. And then the other kind of boasting here is where you brag on yourself. Proverbs tell us what? Let somebody else do that. I think there's a place for that. And it's nice when we receive it. But talking about yourself in a way that's always, it's like a jack. You're just ratcheting that car higher and higher when you keep elevating yourself. I did this. I've never done that. I've done this. My family always does this. I'm like this. And you keep doing that, and it's really subtle. Next thing you know, you jacked yourself way up here, and everybody's up there looking at you. And here's the thing about it. In all three of these, the person who's boasting, when all is said and done, when it's all washed out, how do they look?
Foolish.
It's a great, appropriate expression. They bragged on this. I want to do this. I want to give this. And in the end, they just look weak. They look ineffective. They look foolish. They really do. Yeah. And then look at these 26:22. We think this a little bit. We talked about friendship, but it's a little different. 26:22. Andrew, morning. Will you read 26:22? And Becca, will you read 11:13? And Ken, can you read 26:20 for us? All right, 26:22.
The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body.
All right, tasty little news and tidbits on people. All right, 11:13.
A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals matter.
Okay, so that second one is talking about somebody who's a faithful friend, and in their friendship, they know that there's information they need to keep quiet about. But the other person is just gushing out, like we've seen. And then 26:20 again.
For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases.
It's like that James thing again about fire in the tongue, isn't it? There would be probably overall a lot better relationships if along the way people kept quiet on some things and then share some information and tidbits. And again, this is, like we've seen often this morning, this requires a lot of wisdom and discretion, when to say something and when not. And sometimes it's just as much of a mistake to fail to say something when you should say something. And boy, that's tough to know the two, and which one is which. And there are things sometimes we have to communicate to people. But then there are some things that when you look at the consequences, this is not productive, it's not helping anyone, it's not helping me, it's just going to, you know, it might be in a moment put me in a position of, look, I know something. Think about it. The person who knows something, it's like a position of power. Did you know about so-and-so? No. And that pause right there, that person drinks up that power. You didn't hear it from me. But, you know, or I want to tell you, but don't tell anybody. By the way, the person who told them that told them the same thing, and the person who told them. Okay? So, and then what happens here is that there are wedges driven between people. There are hard feelings. There, you know, those stickers are put on people. And it just, it creates quarrels, creates tension and division and all those kinds of things. So there's two more, and I really want to get to the last one. Lying, not shocked to hear this, right? I mean, the Bible is replete. Whenever you have moral instruction in the Bible, even all the way back to the Ten Commandments about false witnesses, you have a lot of moral imperatives about honesty. So let's look at these here, 12, 19, and 20. So can you read that for us, Les, 12, 19, and 20, and then Cindy, 17, 20. All right, and then Lori, can you read 19, 5, and then 22? And then Vince, here in a moment, 21, 28, please. So, 12, 19 to 20.
The truthful lip will be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy.
Okay, 17, 20.
He who has a crooked mind finds no good, and he who is perverted in his language falls into evil.
Falls. Interesting. 19, 5, and then 22.
A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. What is desired in a man is steadfast love, and a poor man is better than a liar.
All right, let's pause right there. Remember, we just recently talked about riches and possessions, money and possessions, and we talked about sometimes the Proverbs, poverty is associated with laziness and dishonesty and a poor character. And riches are associated with one who works hard and they're honest and they labor diligently and God blesses them. Here, it says, a poor man is better than a liar. Now, what this is saying is that this is describing the person whose lot in life is difficult because they're poor. Not necessarily because they've done something wrong, which Proverbs does describe certain poor people that way. But here it's saying it's better to be a poor person than to lie. Okay, so it shows you that value system there. And then 21, 28, please.
A false witness will perish, but the man who listens to the truth will speak forever.
All right, thank you. Look at in many of these Proverbs, the aspect of time and lying. How is lying depicted in its relationship with time? Like short term, long term, immediate, eventual? What kind of relationship does lying have with time? Okay, there's a long lasting impact. Indeed. What else?
The verse. The chapter 12 said that it's but for a lie, but for a moment, but the truth lasts forever, basically.
You might can help yourself for a moment telling a lie, and then that moment's over, and then there are the consequences of the lie, which go on and on and on and on and on and on. So it's the idea that, you know, again, consequences. Honesty can be hard in the moment, but it's good in the long run. Lying can look very appealing in the moment, but any kind of benefit is soon passed. It doesn't last. And truth endures. And even the idea, think about it, just in general, what is false is not enduring, and what is true is enduring. I mean, just like the Word of God. What is false really doesn't last. Every false notion and philosophy and ideology and concept has had its day in the sun and then melted. And God's Word is eternal. Okay, let's look at this one. Flattery. Y'all are such a great class. I wanted to get to this last one. I'm pretty much ensured that nobody's going to say something positive about this lesson, about this one. Okay, 26:28. Earl, can you read 26:28 for us? Zachary 28:23 and Lori 29:5. 26:28, yeah.
A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth looks ruined.
Okay, Hebrew parallelism, this is not an antithetic parallel. This is a synonymous parallel. What is synonymous to lying here? They both have bad consequences and bad moral character behind them. It's synonymous with lying. Because a lot of flattery is lying, isn't it? All right, 28:23.
Whoever rebukes a man will afterwards find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue.
There's a time element. Well, afterwards, eventually. All right, Lori, last one, 29:5.
A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet.
Whose feet is this, you think?
The flatterer.
I think so. Yeah. What do we mean here by flattery? Does the Bible say anything about commending and praising someone and complimenting them? There's some good examples of that. What did Jesus say when Peter confessed, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God"? What did Jesus say? First thing he said to him was what?
Blessed are you,
Simon. When the scribe came and asked Jesus about the greatest commandment, and Jesus gave it, and then he replied back to him, and he replied and elaborated on that, and Jesus says, "You're not far from the kingdom." So we have all kinds of examples of stating something positive that someone's done or said and so forth. Okay. What's flattery, though? What's the difference?
You've spoken with an ulterior motive.
An ulterior motive. So now, what's that motive? What can't be the motive?
To get something for yourself. Somehow. Yes. Someone owe you a favor or something.
Right. Can we look at words as gifts? And if you give a gift to someone just to get one back, what's the value of the gift, right? A gift is a gift. And so if you're going to compliment someone, you're saying that for their benefit, you're giving them that gift, you don't expect to win something back. And I think that's, I think that people have trouble with that. I remember one of the first interviews I ever had to get a teaching job. This is decades ago. And the principal asked me, "What do you think about giving A's?" And I said, "Well, if they earn them, give them to them." He goes, "Good answer." He goes, "Some teachers think that A's are like gold in their pocket, and they rarely give them out." And that stuck with me. I thought there was a lot of wisdom in that. I thought about how that doing something good for someone or saying something positive to someone, some people think it's like giving away their money. It's like if I say something positive to you, it takes something out of me. Well, what if it does? It's a gift. You're helping that person. You're sacrificing. I'll brag on you if you'll brag on me. That's no good. That is flattery, okay? You're trying to get something. Like bragging on the boss. You know, "You're the best boss I ever had, by the way. Reviews up next week," you know, that kind of thing. But flattery is a manipulative use of words, right? No wonder it's synonymous there with lying. And that's what's going on with people. They're using words to manipulate other people. And usually, it takes a while. It takes a little experience in life. But usually, you can tell when somebody's just flattering you. And it makes you want to go throw up. And you get suspicious of that person. So Think about how you feel when someone's flattering you and you feel manipulated. It is also great to be legitimately praised for something that you've done. And that's a wonderful thing to do. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate all your comments, and you did a great job, and I mean that.